the show.
Hey everyone, and welcome to The Boundless Show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, in the studio with the couple today, Steve and Candace. Hey guys.
Hey Lisa.
Hey Lisa.
Founders of Boundless.
We are happy to be here. It's good.
It's good.
Yeah, glad to have a babysitter on board today.
Oh, see, that's good. So then you can be out and about. Now, I already was out and about. I had to stop at Starbucks because we had a benefits meeting this morning for employees that literally just about sent me over the edge because I think I realized...
Because the benefits are so good.
Our benefits are amazing. I will testify to that. However, figuring out what they are and then, in fact, figuring out what your various copays and deductibles are and how many specific benefits cards you need to use for different benefits. Yeah, I can't figure that out because I think you need either an MBA or some kind of CPA kind of certification to work through that. And so I needed to go to Starbucks and get a caramel macchiato.
Did you get to use your Starbucks benefits card for that?
You know what? I didn't. Can I tell you that I literally right now have about 8 Starbucks gift cards and I always forget to use them.
Oh,
so
can I have
I think I was just gonna
say, I will remember.
Maybe I will just dole those out and go from there. But please do continue sending them, people, if any of you have sent me one.
And if you get a Starbucks gift card from Lisa this Christmas, just know it was a re-gift.
Especially if it's like for $4.65, then you know it was like used, which is awesome. But very appropriately, I was just reading my cup, which is already in a Christmas motif, or as Starbucks would say, a holiday motif, with little ornaments hanging off of a tree. And I was just inspired, not by their statement that says, "We invite you to listen to your desires and to renew your hope, to see the world not as it is, but as it could be. Go ahead, wish. It's what makes the holidays the holidays."
Now, by the holidays, do they mean every holiday of the year? I mean, is this our chance to wrap
I don't
up
think
the
so,
year
because
with
the cup
memory
is
of
red
Flag
and
Day?
It has ornaments on it. I'm thinking they're just talking about Christmas, but they don't want to say Christmas.
Yes. They want our money, but not our faith.
Yes. So we are going to, we're going to talk about moving into what we want to call the holidays. And we're going to call them the holidays because we're going to talk about Thanksgiving too. Make sure that you hang with us. Later on in the show, Candace is going to be addressing a female listener's question about purity rings, when to wear it, when not to wear it, what finger to wear it on, what kind of metal should it be made out of? All of those important questions. And really, is it hurting her chances of finding a man? Because, hello, you need to do the ring sweep when you go into a big room. So we're going to talk about that. And then we're going to give you the second half of our interview with Dave Arnold and Paul McCusker about the Screwtape Letters. More of the devil. We're looking forward to that. So you just coming out of Halloween. We even talk about the devil when it's not Halloween here at the Boundless Show because we are that cosmopolitan. So anyway, let's talk about Thanksgiving and Christmas. I personally always have high hopes when I go into this season because I like to write Christmas cards and send them. And I like to write handwritten notes in them. And
yes.
I like to get my shopping
Bless you,
done
Lisa.
Ahead of time. And I like to have a nice Thanksgiving. And in this this year, in fact, I'm going to be hosting Thanksgiving at my place, which I volunteered for and maybe I'm not quite prepared for. So that might have been overreaching a little bit, but I'm going to do that. And then I also travel home for Christmas. And so I've got to put that. I already bought my flight, if you can even believe that. So that is miraculous. So I've
Hopefully
gotten.
You won't get stuck this time.
Right. Yes. Jesus, please hear my cry. Yes, I often do because I go to Fargo, North Dakota, where there is like one flight every third day that goes into that town. So that provides an additional amount of drama for me. But we are kind of already hit by this commercialism. I mean, I talked, you know, here about my Starbucks cup already. We know that literally the day after Halloween, they already had the ornaments in the stores. Mm-hmm. Everything is ramping up for, you know, what they call the holiday season. And I think it brings me to just a point of like frenetic nervousness about this. Because even though I try to plan for it every year, I find difficulty balancing what I need to do versus like how I should be and what my attitude should be. How about you two?
Yeah, that's good. The inertia is all about the money side of it. I mean, I feel sorry for our postal guys who have these overwhelming volumes of catalogs they got to cram into all the all the little boxes. Mm-hmm. And those, you know, start coming early. In fact, we noticed there's one that was already talking about the spring season, that they were even jumping ahead of Christmas already. But all the activity, the frenetic part of it, really is on the money side. And what tends to get glossed over and gets lost in all of it is anything that's meaningful, where, you know, we really get the sense of what you were looking for, which was, this year I want it to be a little more special and meaningful than it was last year.
Well, I think the challenge for us is that we get out the calendar because we don't want to miss anything, but we start writing dates and must-dos on the calendar, and I start hyperventilating and thinking, oh, just get me to January. This is so, it's overwhelming how much stuff we have to do. And it's hard to enjoy what's happening right this minute because you're so focused on the to-do list.
Right. And you just feel, like you said, you start getting these invites and you feel obligated. And then you feel like you're choosing some friends over others based on whose party
right,
you're
like
going to.
Like our invitation to you to come for Thanksgiving. Does this mean you're not coming?
Okay, well that...
You're not coming, right? Because you're hosting?
I'm not, yeah.
Can I have your piece of pie?
Yeah, you can. Candace and Steve invited me to their place, which I totally appreciated. But see, with me, this is a good thing to think about, because a lot of singles out there, we need to figure out what we're going to do, because we have our friends, we have our family. Can we meld the two together? Sometimes not. No. You know, so it's very tricky. Like, I don't travel for Thanksgiving, but I have a sister and her family here in town. And often, you know, I'll spend Thanksgiving with them, and then I'll invite some of my friends, and she'll invite friends. And last year we had this whole like Middle Eastern bash because she had her Middle Eastern friends. And so it was all this Middle Eastern food and then like a turkey and right. stuffing.
Wow. Turkey's
so
good
it was
with
all
hummus
thrown
on
together.
It.
I know. It was very fun. So this year we're doing something a little bit different. I think I'm going to have it at my place. But then you're just kind of like, okay, well, who would be comfortable here and who wouldn't, and who, you know, can deal with my sister, and I don't want to offend my sister, and, you know, whatever. So it's just, it's a big brouhaha trying to throw it all together.
Well, we have been trying to reach out to our single friends who don't have family in town and invite them over for Thanksgiving. And actually, it started when one of our close friends asked if she could come. And I was a little, you know, taken aback at first, thinking, well, I don't know. Can we incorporate single people into our Thanksgiving unplanned? Not
That's
that
a question many
wrong.
Ask, Candace, well, no, around this
I
time.
I think the issue is...
Are these
is,
people big eaters?
No, can you... I guess the question is, can you branch out beyond your family? Because you mm-hmm. do think holiday equals family. And I'm so glad we invited her. And so if you're single and don't have a place to go for Thanksgiving and don't have plans yet, I would encourage you to
call Candace and Steve. And just
send a reverse invitation.
No, call somebody you know who's a good friend and say, hey, can I join you guys for Thanksgiving? I'd be glad to bring the pies. That's what my friend did. And you know, don't be alone on Thanksgiving.
Right. And that's actually what I did. I went through my list of friends here in town who I know do not have family in town and who I know do not or suspected did not have plans. And those are the ones I invited because I don't want anyone to be like left alone.
And you know, if you don't feel comfortable inviting yourself to someone's house, host it. Invite people you know, invite a family over and treat them to Thanksgiving where the wife doesn't have to cook or whatever. It is a good time to branch out.
And keep it simple. I mean, remember the Charlie Brown Thanksgiving.
Popcorn,
toast.
Jelly beans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Or like, you know, we did last year, might do again this year. Go to Whole Foods and just get it already made.
Yeah. I've actually never made a turkey, so I'm kind of nervous about that. And I don't know.
That's the easy part. Call
me.
Is that
easy?
Yeah, I can help you with
okay.
that.
I'm better at sides. I don't know. So I'm going to have to see. But so the thing is, you have Thanksgiving, then you come off of that and you have to head into Christmas. And you're just, I mean, I don't know how people who do not plan throughout the year, because I'm very determined. Now, I think for 2 years, I've not sent out Christmas cards because I'm kind of like all or nothing. If I can't sit down and do my little cards and write a note to everyone, then I'm like, forget it. I'm not going to write anything. I'm not going to send anything to anyone. And I just get upset about it because I don't want to just send a card and sign my name.
Especially
and
if it doesn't have a picture of you.
If it's just
a blank, you know, generic picture with your name auto-inscribed.
You know what? I'm just
going to
put boundless.org and let people go look at my photo on Boundless. That'll be the equivalent of my Christmas photo. I don't think I'll get a Christmas photo done. I'm not sure.
Well, and then there's all the options now that people are doing electronic Christmas greetings. They just do a Facebook blast instead of doing
Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
Okay. So I want to know, what are your, and And by your, I'm going to ask Steve and Candace, but I want to know you guys too out there, editor at boundless.org, write to us. I want to know, what are your non-negotiables for Thanksgiving and Christmas? What has to happen every year, or it is not the holiday season? And I'm going to say, let's make sure that Jesus is in there, but we're going to give Jesus as a given. But what what traditions or what habits or what items, you know, what has to be there?
You're asking the wrong couple, because our list is quite long.
Well, but it is something that we started back when we were dating. We were coming up on the, I don't know, it was about the same time of year. And we realized that we had a lot going on. And we said, let's at least get together and make sure our calendars are coordinated. And in the process, we started listing out all these things, all these checklist type items that had to be taken care of. And we said, you know, let's try to prioritize these a little bit by what's most meaningful. Because frankly, there's a lot that happens around Christmas that gets done out of guilt or obligation or just
routine,
tradition,
habit.
Routine. That some of it is, it's not healthy. I mean, especially the part that really is driven by the consumer things. I mean, you think about some of the dumb commercials you get and you think, who thinks this actually works? That somebody says, give that special somebody a air cleaning solution for their house, or I mean, some ridiculous thing. But you know, we laugh that off, but it is interesting how much pressure we feel this time of year that really is motivated by marketers who know this is the time of year to make their money. And so trying to back up on that checklist and say, which of these things, if we had to go back and put an asterisk besides the ones that are the non-negotiables, are the most meaningful, how would that list look different from what we would typically take into this time of year? And so that did force us to think differently about the, you know, making time for, let's say, a Christmas play or doing an Advent type reading. And that over the past few years has really helped us to have a good counterbalance to the consumer side.
Well, the challenge for us, Lisa, is that we do something one time and it's a success with our kids. And they then say, oh, that's a tradition. And so our traditions list has gotten really long because we will do something once and think, well, that was nice, you know, cool. And then our oldest will say, next year, same bad time, same bad channel.
Yeah.
But for Thanksgiving, the non-negotiable is, of course, the turkey. You have to have turkey. I just love turkey. But going around the table and saying what you're thankful for and giving everybody an opportunity to have the spotlight for a few seconds and saying that we're thankful to God, not just saying I'm thankful for Thanksgiving, which is what, you know, that's sort of the Hallmark version of the holiday category. But also one thing we've started is going around and asking sort of a trivia questions about the pilgrims to see what people know, and you know, and putting the three kernels of corn on the plate to represent what they were subsisting on prior to the Indians coming in and helping them figure out how to grow food.
Wow. Yeah, I think for me it is well, a combination of a couple of things. Thanksgiving, I grew up we never watched like football or anything. So Thanksgiving we usually do, and Christmas too, our kind of thing is games. We play, we do like a game night or whatever with our family, and that's always fun. But so I think that's definitely one of them. I get into the habit of with my family when I'm home, and I love going home to northern Minnesota for Christmas because it literally is like stepping back in time and slowing down. I mean, there is not a lot to do there. And so I have the chance to just sit and be quiet. And now I've started doing my little Christmas chronicle of, you know, my time at home through Facebook. So I'll have my little album and I write little captions on all my photos and everyone like checks it, you know, and is like, oh. I think this Christmas too will be my first year in, well, I've had 3 years in a row of going through a breakup, so that is awesome. Oh, no. I'm hoping, I'm not going to date anyone between now and Christmas because the chances of having a breakup, you know. So I'm looking forward to that. And then I, too, also blaze my family away with what are your goals for the coming year? And they hate that every time I ask them. I am, like, apparently the only goal setter in my whole family because
That's
they
great.
Hate it. But I bring it up usually around, like, New Year's Eve or whatever. And
well, see, Lisa, we should get together because
that's because you guys are all about the goals.
Absolutely. Yeah, we love that, and we don't get the same reception from
And I've done it with friends, too. One of my friends, Christina, we got together New Year's Eve, and I asked her about her goals, and she literally was, like, on the sofa with a pillow over her head. She was so overcome by, like, trying to think of what goals were. So that was pretty hilarious. But definitely some traditions there, and things to, I think you guys alluded to it, you have to prepare for, and you have to, and by prepare, I mean, you know, tactically as well as in your heart, for recognizing, I am going to stop, I'm going to pause, mm-hmm. I'm going to, and I know at my church we do this through our Advent celebration, you know, and it just prolongs, I think, that season and allows us to reflect. And I think we need to do that. Otherwise, things will definitely get away from us. So,
Lisa, I'm going to put a blog post up at the Boundless Line about our traditions and ask people to send us theirs. So maybe we can just add a few and cut a few.
Okay, well, you need to just cut some. You're not adding anymore, remember, because your kids keep adding. So do not tell Candace and Steve to add anymore.
Can I do a traditions exchange?
Exactly, yeah. But some people do need traditions. That's good, and that's always fun. And it's something you can add to once you get married, which was the part, and start a family. So, well, thanks, you two, for weighing in on this. I'm excited. We'll have to do a recap in January and see how well we did with our holiday seasons, because... I'm excited. Ooh, I need to go get my tree, and that has me all nervous. Okay, whatever. So, all right, well, that's great.
My dear Wormwood, everything is clearly going well. I'm especially glad to hear that the two new friends have now made him acquainted with their whole crowd. All these, as I find from the record office, are thoroughly reliable people. Steady, consistent scoffers and worldlings who, without any spectacular crimes, are progressing quietly and comfortably towards... our father's house. You speak of there being great laughers. I trust this does not mean that you are under the impression that laughter as such is always in our favor. The point is worth some attention. I divide the causes of human laughter into joy, fun, the joke proper, and flippancy. You will see joy among friends and lovers reunited on the eve of a holiday. Among adults, some pretext in the way of jokes is usually provided, but the facility with which the smallest witticisms produce laughter at such a time shows that they are not the real cause. What that real cause is, we do not know. Something like it is expressed in much of that detestable art which the humans call music. And something like it occurs in heaven, a meaningless acceleration in the rhythm of celestial experience, quite opaque to us. Laughter of this kind does us no good and should always be discouraged. Besides, the phenomenon is of itself disgusting and a direct insult to the realism, dignity, and austerity of hell. Fun is closely related to joy, a sort of emotional froth arising from the play instinct. It is very little use to us. It could sometimes be used, of course, to divert humans from something else which the enemy would like them to be feeling or doing, but in itself it has wholly undesirable tendencies. It promotes charity, courage, contentment, and many other evils. The joke proper, which turns on the sudden perception of incongruity, is a much more promising field. I'm not thinking primarily of indecent or bawdy humor, which, though much relied upon by second-rate tempters, is often disappointing in its results. I shall never forget the hours which I wasted, hours to me of unbearable tedium, with one of my early patients in bars and smoking rooms before I learned that there are some humans to whom an indecent story ceases to produce lasciviousness precisely at the moment it becomes funny, while there are others in whom laughter and lust are excited at the same moment by the same thing. The first sort joke about sex because it gives rise to many incongruities. The second cultivate incongruities because they afford a pretext for talking about sex. Find out which type your patient is and see that he does not find out. Flippancy, I believe, is the best of all. In the first place, it is very economical. Only a clever human can make a real joke about virtue or indeed about anything else, but a flippant human is able to talk as if virtue were funny without actually making a joke. You see, among flippant people, the joke is always assumed to have been made. No one actually makes it. But every serious subject is discussed in a manner which implies that they have already found a ridiculous side to it. If prolonged, the habit of flippancy builds up around a man, the finest armor plating against the enemy that I know, and it is quite free from the dangers inherent in the other sources of laughter. It is 1,000 miles away from joy. It deadens instead of sharpening the intellect, and it makes no affection between those who practice it. Your affectionate Uncle Screwtape.
What would you guys say is, I think when I heard that this was coming out, and obviously being familiar with C.S. Lewis and knowing the Screwtape letters, I know there have been a lot of comments out in circles about having done this, related to, wow, this piece is kind of timeless, not only as a piece of literature, but the fact that we are talking about the devil's relentless pursuit of people who he refers to as the patients. And seeing that, especially with our demographic being young adults and people who are out and about in the culture and often having to make decisions based on, you know, what is scripturally right, what isn't. What do you really see as the hope for conveying a message in our time that really translates across from where C.S. Lewis was?
Well, this, as you alluded to, the fact is that the Screwtape letters are timeless. All of the messages that were relevant back when Lewis wrote the book initially are still very relevant today. So the goal for us, obviously, would be to introduce this to a new audience. There are a lot of people who know the Screwtape letters because they've read the book, or maybe they heard one of the books on tape, as Paul said. And there's some very good books on tape out there. But by doing this in a different approach, in a different way, and sort of, as we've discussed before, thinking of this as a sort of a rock and roll approach to the production for Screwtape, opened up a lot of boundaries for things that we could try and explore and hopefully connect with this new generation that way.
I think it's funny, too. I think we're a very arrogant generation in that we have an almost adolescent sense that nobody has ever experienced what we're experiencing. Depending on who's driving the conversation, it's like, well, the 1960s changed everything, and now we're seeing that played out 50 years later. When, in fact, in 1941, C.S. Lewis, in his time and culture, was dealing with a lot of the same things that we're dealing with now, and you can argue that every generation has. And what he tapped into through the Screwtape letters is the timelessness of the human condition and what we struggle with in our human condition, whether it's iPods and whether it's social networking or whether it's handwriting letters or whatever it is at any time and place. The danger for us is that we forget that there's nothing new here in what we as human beings are dealing with, whether it's temptation, satanic attacks. I mean, we've duped ourselves into even thinking, well, we're not even sure about Satan anymore. We're not even sure about dark spiritual forces. We like to watch that stuff in movies, but we don't necessarily want to hear about it in churches because that's bad news, and it's very uncomfortable, especially when we have churches who the perception is they're there to make us feel good about ourselves. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't make us feel good about ourselves to stop and think that we could be duped mm-hmm. by forces beyond our control. And I don't mean predestined as in our DNA and genetic predestination. I mean that there are forces out there that are actually working against us, just as there are forces out there who are working for us. And some of this stuff is out of our control. So I think one of the things that's jarring about the Screwtape letters is that it makes us stop and realize there's a bigger picture. And we're part of that bigger picture on both good and evil and how it's playing out in our lives.
I think that's true. And I think the church is so hesitant to talk about the devil and talk about hell. Mm-hmm. And, it's interesting. I was just at a women's retreat last weekend, and we were just talking about some of the things that the women, especially in our small group, were struggling with. And this one woman, the year prior, had filed for divorce from her husband, and women from that retreat had talked with her and prayed with her, and she decided to back out of that. And now she and her husband are working on their marriage. And it just struck me how we're so reluctant to acknowledge, we're so faithless in realizing that God, you know, the supernatural aspect of who our God is, and the fact that he can just, you know, bam, I mean, he can hit, he can change any circumstance he wants, he can work, you know, we just don't, I'm going to get all charismatic here, we just don't call on the name of Jesus anymore and realize the power, you know, in the name of Christ.
I think the problem is that we don't think we need to. Mm-hmm. In other words, we have to have a healthy fear,
right,
of consequence, of forces, of God himself, mm-hmm. a healthy fear of God mm-hmm. that reminds us that we need to call on him. I mean, if you look at the Old Testament, and I don't want to encroach on anybody's theology with this, but when you look at the number of times when God says to the nation of Israel, based on their faithlessness, okay, I've given you every chance, and I guess the Babylonians are going to have to come in and teach you a lesson, comes in, takes them captive. I mean, we're not talking some passive theological idea. We're talking about people being taken prisoners in the worst possible sense, mm-hmm. that the whole nation was held accountable. God was ticked off.
Yeah.
God said, I've had enough. Now, it's only by his infinite patience that he would say, but there will be redemption at the end of this. But I've got to put you through this period in order for you to even call out my name for help. And I'm afraid for us as a generation that it's all so very happy and it's all about me feeling good about myself, that we forget that there is within God, as a God of love, an aspect of justice. And Paul said it, basically, whom he loves, he will chastise. And there's a point when we really need to wake up and consider what Scripture says about it, consider what people like C.S. Lewis have written about in Screwtape, where there are things at play here that we have to reckon with to our own detriment if we don't.
Hmm. Well, that's cool. I think, we need to let folks know that, first of all things the Screwtape Letters, as far as the Focus on the Family radio theater version of it, can be found at screwtape.com. So we want to make sure people check that out. You are all on top of the social networking as well. I know that Screwtape and Wormwood have been twittering back and mm-hmm. forth to each other. So we would just hope that our listeners, as they listen to that conversation, you know, just, you know, please put on your full armor. Otherwise, we're going to blame Paul and Dave for just drawing people away from the faith. But whatever, that's just a minor detail.
Just blame Paul.
Screwtape.com. Yeah. Yes, that's amazing. And not that this series or not that this production needs any more credibility. I mean, it is it's the first ever full cast dramatization of this work. But it also has the involvement of Doug Gresham, who is mm-hmm. the stepson of C.S. Lewis. Bam! What is that about? Like, he's hosting it. That's amazing.
Well, Doug is a good friend. I mean, we worked closely with him. Well, we worked with him very closely on Chronicles of Narnia, and I think our production gave a lot of credibility. I mean, he knew we were going to stay faithful to the material, which I think is what he's most concerned about, mm-hmm. that we're not going to mess around with it, reinterpret it, or change it from what Lewis intended. And it's always been our determination to represent Lewis, even though technically it's a dramatization and you could even call it an abridgment. The truth is, just about every word that Lewis wrote in the original Screwtape Letters is represented in some form in the drama. So it is Lewis fully realized through drama, and I think that's one of the things that allows us to do what we do, because Doug trusts us to do it and do it well.
Well, he also brings some interesting insights into the conversation about the history of the making of the novel when C.S. Lewis was writing it. He has that intimate history with the author, which is a nice touch as well for us. And included in all of the behind the scenes things, hearing what he had, what his expression of the story is as well, is very interesting, because different people walk away with different ideas about that. So it's fun to have Doug in the show.
Wow, that's awesome. Okay, well, just as we wrap up here, I need to get a quick bit of info from each of you, and that is, looking ahead, I want to know what, and again, we're going to tell people to go to screwtape.com and quite frankly, to get all that we've heard from people who've heard many of the radio theater productions. I think it's one of our, unfortunately, you know, it seems to be some secret out there. I'm just like, people, we just figure out what this is and listen to them. But I want to know, if you could only make one more radio theater production, each of you, I want each of your answers, what would it be, like your wish list of whether it's a story or whatever that's out there, and then who would be your wish list of, you know, actor or actors to be in that? So, Dave, why don't we start with you?
Well, the story that I've often wanted to do, and we've been in negotiations to try and get the rights to, is The Hobbit. Hmm. We've put together an entire package of how we'd package the product and how we would produce the material and send it off to the Tolkien estate. It's still doable, maybe, but we don't know whether we'll be able to get the rights on that because of the film coming up and all of that. But I'd love to work with Andy Serkis again on The Hobbit. It was great fun working with him. And I think the benefit of that, too, is now that we've developed the relationship with him, to be able to do something a bit more normal with him might be fun, actually.
That'd be good.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't think of... I'd have to go through a list of a couple of dozen things. Selfishly, I'd love to do more Father Gilberts, but that's very selfish reasons. But we are thinking about the science fiction trilogy, Lewis's science fiction trilogy, which we're trying to figure out how to do that. I'd love to do The Great Divorce as well. I'd love for us to do all of Lewis's fiction, including Till We Have Faces, which I think is an underrated book of his. Everybody kind of goes to the more sensational things. And I'd love for us to have, as part of our catalog, everything that he's done fiction-wise. Acting, there are too many that I would love to work with. I'm not gonna name drop. I won't say, but there are some that
you name dropped earlier. What are you talking about?
Well, it was Doug Gresham. I mean, he's a personal friend. That's not name dropping if you're mentioning personal friends.
And
right?
Let's be honest. I don't mind if you guys put me on your list for voice talent. Okay, I'm just saying. I mean, I will look at my schedule. I'll see what I have available to see.
Yeah, we'll get back to you on that. Okay,
you were on the list.
Yeah,
I know.
But Paul, just kind of chucked.
Please don't tell me for which
Gollum?
Character.
Yeah, that was for Gollum in The Hobbit.
What sketchy character in The Hobbit would I be?
Maybe Smaug the Dragon. I'm not. Well, never mind.
Or what about just like Hobbit number 27?
We don't want to typecast, so.
Hobbit number 27, working out in the garden with, you know, the shrubs. Okay, whatever. I'm not feeling dissed. I am people. Please help me. Anyway, okay, again, it is the Screwtape Letters. It is brand new from Focus on the Family. Just came out this month. Go to screwtape.com and get all the info on this production. Great talking to both Dave Arnold and Paul McCusker today about this and really getting into some of the deeper themes. I think that was important to talk about. Again, a timeless piece, as has already been said. So we're looking forward to hearing more from you guys in the future. Please go out and continue to get those rights to things, because we need to get more of these. So I've actually talked with several of my friends who already purchased it and said that they're pretty much like, they put them in their cars and they're just already kind of freaked out. Like they're like, I don't know if I can drive to this because I'm kind of freaked out, but especially at night. So maybe we don't recommend listening to it at night in the car, but beyond that, definitely do it. So thanks you guys so much for being a part of this.
Thank you.
Pleasure. I know you're down here. Glover's told me exactly where you are. Now come out of that sewage pipe this instant.
Uncle.
I have read your latest report.
Have you?
Yes. You took a great many pages to tell a very simple story. The long and short of it is that you have let a man slip through your fingers.
Well, not entirely.
Oh, no, 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 dear nephew. You won't downplay your condition. The situation is very grave, and I see no reason why I should try to shield you from the consequences of your inefficiency. A repentance and renewal of what the other side call grace on the scale of which you described is a defeat of the First Order. It amounts to a second conversion, and probably on a deeper level than the first.
I don't know what happened, Uncle. It was going so well. My patient was walking along by the old mill, in an ideal frame of mind, I thought. And I was coming in for a grand attack when suddenly there was an asphyxiating cloud blinding and choking me.
Had you not been such a fool, you would have recognized that the asphyxiating cloud is a well-known phenomenon. It is the enemy's most barbarous weapon and generally appears when he is directly present to the patient under certain modes not yet fully classified. Some humans are permanently surrounded by it and therefore inaccessible to us.
Right. Thank you for explaining, Uncle. I'll be going now.
No, no, no. We are not yet finished. Let us speak of your blunders.
Must we?
We must. Or you will never learn.
Okay, well, we are opening up this week's inbox, and I am in studio with Candace. Hey, Candace.
Hi, Lisa.
Hey, good to see the whites of your eyes today. Well, this is going to be fun because we actually received a question from a listener that I think is pretty interesting, and I'm sure we'll both have some opinions on it. So here we go. She says, I am 29 and still single. Since I was 14, I have worn a purity ring on my wedding ring finger. I rarely take it off, but lately I've been wondering if it's a hindrance to Christian guys to be wearing a ring on that finger. I've thought about wearing it on the other hand or just not wearing it at all. I don't want to prevent a conversation from happening if he sees I have a ring, leading him to think I'm already taken. On the other hand, I know that God knows the commitment I've made to remain sexually pure until marriage. I know that my mentors and friends are looking out for godly men to introduce to me, and they know that I'm available. And I know that God isn't limited by my choice of jewelry. So should I even worry about it, or just trust him completely to work in his own way and time, holding fast to my outward sign of an inner commitment?
Will the purity ring ward off the wedding ring? And I am here to say, yes, take the ring off. The ring.
Oh my goodness. That is so controversial, Candace. You just blazed me away.
The ring, at least I see your wedding ring finger is naked.
It is.
The ring is a symbol primarily to the wearer. It's an outward symbol of your commitment to God, and it's a sign between you and the Lord of what you're standing for. I don't think most people in our culture know what that ring means. And the wedding ring finger, though, is a universal sign that when people see a ring on that finger, they think she's either engaged or married. So why not take the ring off and put it on a chain and wear it around your neck? Have it on your right hand. Have it somewhere as a reminder to you of what you're standing for, and sort of a, you know, it's you're in solidarity with God that you're going to be faithful to this and you're going to honor him. But why would you put anything on your body that would give the impression or maybe risk giving the impression that you're married? I don't see the benefit of it at age 29.
Yeah. I think it's cool when, for example, I think, did this start in the 80s? I can't remember when the whole True Love
Waits thing started. It was either late 80s or early 90s.
Okay, because I think it was right around, you know, kind of that curve of the mid to late 80s. And I think it's cool for girls who are like teenagers who do that kind of thing, like, you know, have that ceremony or whatever it is with their dad that just shows, you know, him protecting them and whatever. And that's neat. But once you do reach marriageable age,
right?
Yeah, then you can take it off the finger. And maybe it is good to have it on that finger until you are,
right,
you know,
yeah,
able
when
to
you're
be married.
16 and you've got a ring and people say, well, what does that mean? Because obviously they know you're not married.
Right.
Then you have an opportunity to say, you know, this is a symbol of a commitment I've made to save myself sexually for my husband. And I think then it's a great conversation starter. But you're 29, you're at a conference, you see a good looking single guy, he smiles at you, then he looks at your hand and he walks away. He's not going to say, well, what does that ring represent? He's just going to assume you're married. So I say, take the ring off. Now, on the flip side, Lisa, all the married men out there, I say, put the ring on. Mm-hmm. How many times have you had a conversation with a guy and you think he's sharp, he's got it together, he loves the Lord, and you're talking to him and all of a sudden, horror of horrors, you find out he's married and you've had this conversation that could be construed as flirting because you had no idea he was married. I know so many married men who don't wear rings and I do not get that.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, I've talked to him for 2 minutes. I'm already naming our kids.
Exactly. You're trying to figure out if your first name rhymes with his last name in a way
exactly.
That's weird.
Exactly. Oh, that's just dicey. Yeah.
No, I have a friend who works in the church nursery and a man came and dropped off his child. He did not have a ring on. She thought maybe he is a widower. And she asked very innocently the woman working with her, is he single? And the woman was so offended. How could you not know? How could you assume he's not married? Well, he wasn't wearing a ring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's interesting. And maybe I don't know if this is another question altogether or if we can maybe segue into it quickly here. What then, you know, there's kind of that the ring sweep. Like I always say, you know, I mentioned at the front end of the show that I was over in Starbucks. I am convinced that everyone that goes into our Starbucks here near Focus is a believer. Like it.
They all sit there with Bibles. So
statistically speaking, I think everyone at that Starbucks is a believer. And so, you know that people go in there and do ring sweeps and they're just like checking people out and whatever. So then what, I mean, then it's kind of taking that next step of, okay, so how do you start up a conversation? And that's where you're saying if guys don't have rings, it can be just awkward.
You want to, you know,
figure out where you're.
There's
where
no
stand.
Seating. It's crowded, and you see a cute guy, and you say, "Hey, is this chair taken?" And well, no, the chair's not, but I am. But you couldn't tell because I'm not wearing a wedding ring.
He like flees from you, and he's like, "Boundaries," and then you're all offended,
and you feel bad that you've maybe caused him to stumble or something. But so, guys, when you get married, get the ring. Mm-hmm. Wear the ring.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we are for purity rings. We do support that.
Yes.
We just maybe don't support them on your ring finger when you are of marriageable age.
Yes.
And I will say, I'm just going to say a side note. I don't think I've ever said this on the show before, but my high school girls that I mentor, I always tell them that with purity rings, I said, you know, obviously, if you got that ring when you were 16, let's hope that there are some underpinnings for why you have that ring and the stuff that you have adhered to. And we need to do a whole other show or Q&A and stuff on sexual purity and what that looks like as a teen and as a 20-something and whatever. But I always tell my girls, I don't care if you have a purity ring on every finger, if you are sitting alone with your boyfriend in his basement, okay? That is not going to keep you pure. So that
Reach
is just
it,
my
sister.
That's just my side note about purity rings, because I never did have one. My dad didn't give me one. I'm not holding it against him, but that's okay. But anyway, yeah. So Candace, good thoughts on that for the women.
Thank
and
you, Lisa.
Bonus for the men. So you guys, if you are single though, do not wear a ring either. Guys.
Oh, I mean, do we even need to say that? Hello.
We don't want guys going out there and buying rings and putting them on the ring fingers if they're not married. So that's just, I haven't noticed that, but that's just preventative maintenance right there.
That's right.
Okay. Well, thanks, Candace. That is it for this week's show. Hopefully it has been both fun and informative for you. As always, we're trying to give you the latest and greatest for young adults, especially those of you out there who are single. Pass this show on to your friends. Tell them about the Boundless Show. Come out and visit us and have a fantastic Thanksgiving and Christmas season as you're heading into it. Start making your plans and write to us at editor@boundless.org. Look for Candace's blog post where she's going to share her 572 Christmas and Thanksgiving traditions and try to pair them down to 570. So maybe you can help her weigh in on that. So, all right. Well, that's it for this week's show. As always, I'm Lisa Anderson for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.